the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, covering, of course, your favorite team, the Arizona Cardinals, my favorite team as well. And this is episode 486. Seth Cox is with me, back from a short hiatus. He didn't do the second show, so we had a special guest, Blake Murphy, who's been on the show before. Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation site for the Arizona Cardinals, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth and I last got together for the review show for last week, which was the embarrassment of the Browns' loss. But guess what? Seth, we finally get to talk about a win. We get to talk about Kyler Murray. We get to talk about a win. We get to talk about good stuff. And this is so much better to talk about. And there's a lot to talk about, right? Because Kyler's back. Connor's back. The Cardinals won a game, and they did it in dramatic fashion. Things look and feel good. And I'll tell you this. The vibe around Kyler Murray and the fan base has changed so much. Now, there are Kyler haters, but I love to see, and there was so much Kyler love in that stadium. It was wonderful to see, because guess what? That's what the fan base should think of their franchise quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, what has kind of been missing from the whole thing, is that it just never felt like the fans were really engaging or like you said, believing or loving on Kyler. And now it was good to see the reaction in a positive way. It was good to see, you know, how people felt about him. And it's good to see that this is something positive that can hopefully just continue to go in a direction that gives Kyler confidence, but also gives this entire franchise the boost it needs to kind of, you and I have tried to spell it out, especially, you know, written, but I just don't think people understand the setback of having to draft another quarterback in this situation, because it, especially now where you're not picking top two, so you don't just get to pick one of the two, like the amount of other things that now have to occur to, and assets that you have to forfeit. And if you guess wrong, and let's be honest, a lot of times it is a guess, you end up like the Carolina Panthers, right?
Oh my gosh. Yes. And that's, remember, people forget the ceiling that Kyler Murray has, the absolute game-changing ability he has. And he has not, we've seen, like, on the passing game as a player, we still haven't seen all of it yet. And I think that's coming, especially now in a new offense. That's forcing him to be a better quarterback. But when you look at guys like in college, like Caleb Williams, guess what? What do we see Caleb Williams doing? Doing some great stuff, playing on a team that's got a terrible defense. He's struggling to win. I'm like, and Caleb Williams, honestly, I look at Caleb Williams as, does he have a better stature for it? But what you basically hope is that he can do what Kyler Murray has already done. And if you've already got Kyler Murray, unless you philosophically believe in the different quarterback frame, why would you blow that up to get the same guy?
Yeah, and you know, the reality becomes, this is just one of those situations where they need to need this to work out, and it, we'll see if it happens. And for right now, you know, it hasn't. And so but you know, step one or game one, and if the return is a positive.
let's talk about. So what we're going to talk about in this episode, it's our review show. We're going to talk Kyler. We're going to talk the good things. There are lots of things to be positive about. We'll talk about things that concerned us. And then lastly, let's kind of look at the schedule the rest of the way. The Cardinals get 8 starts of Kyler Murray. They've got 1 down, 1 win. How many more wins can they possibly get in those 8 games? So let's start the Kyler play. We saw a little bit of everything. It wasn't perfect. In fact, the stat line, if you look at just the stat line, you're going to be a little disappointed. And I'll be honest. When you look at the passing numbers, it was vaguely familiar to some of the games that he had in his first couple of seasons, because he didn't have like gaudy touchdown numbers, which is the one thing I think we've in the first 4 years of his career, we kind of hoped that as a passer, he would develop into a slightly more volume passer and be a little more and get more touchdown passes. Those always look great for quarterback numbers. He ended up having 249 passing yards. That's totally fine. No touchdown passes. Should have had a touchdown pass, but and then that got turned into not even a Kyler rushing touchdown, but a Clayton Tune rushing touchdown off of Michael Wilson. The one interception. And so his passing numbers and his passer rating were real pedestrian. But what we got to see is his first work in this offense. And wow. And the stuff that we saw from Josh Dobbs when he was playing well, it was really nice to see. And let's be honest, he probably should have had a 300-yard passing game. Elijah Higgins with just an inexcusable drop that, oh my gosh. And then the throw to Hollywood, like I don't blame him for making that throw on that third. That's the one question. I'm like, ah. You had Trey McBride just wide open on that third down with so much room, but you also had Hollywood behind a defender wide open in the end zone, and you just a little too much. And that's been the case the last year and a half. That Kyler hadn't been able to get that deep connection with Hollywood on the field since the beginning of last season.
Yeah, and so that'll be one of the big things, you know, and then you look at it, even the touchdown, even though I know that Kyler, you know, ended up taking responsibility for it, the reality was that's a lot of that's on Trey. That just comes with experience, and it's not a negative thing on Trey. He, you know, obviously we'll talk about his phenomenal game, but the fact of the matter is, you know, as you get further along in your career, you start to make side adjustments and you start to make in game and on the field sight adjustments. And Trey's just not there yet. And, you know, if anything, it's kind of a positive in my eye that Kyler threw it understanding they were in a too high look and he didn't want to get Trey killed, right? Like he wanted to give Trey a chance to catch the ball. And so you just look at it from that perspective, you know, you can take a positive away from that, even though it does show up as an interception on the stat sheet. But I mean, man, it was great to see him back, and you see the difference in what he provides this team that we've talked about. It just lacks talent, and there's nothing wrong with saying that. It just lacks the talent of other teams, that's the difference. And he makes up for those holes or that lack of talent, right?
It absolutely. And I will say this, what you pointed out, how Kyler took responsibility. That was something, like, Kyler haters, I need you guys to listen to this. All of y'all middle-aged, like people like me that are like, Kyler, this is something we don't normally hear from Kyler. Kyler doesn't like to take verbally. He's never been one to say, hey, that's on me. He always talks about we need to be better. And that there was the question, in fairness, he was asked what happened on that concept. Should Trey have sat on that? And he says, well, conceptually, yes, but it was a miscommunication because we'd never talked about this. So he was doing what he was supposed to do. So he's like, that's on me. And he's like, he said that. This is something we haven't heard much from Kyler. And this is for those people who have always criticized Kyler. Listen to that maturity. That's like what Carson Palmer, that's what Josh Dobbs, that's what Jonathan Gannon does. Like, that's on me. So he understood that conceptually. Trey should have stopped. That's what the question was. But then he also said he did not throw his teammate under the bus, which is where we've seen that a little bit. And it's, you know, people, it rubs some people the wrong way. But he said, well, you know, there's a miscommunication. We'd never had talked about that. So he was doing what he was supposed to do. You know, in that read, that's what should happen, but we never talked about it. I thought that was extremely mature of him, and he made sure to say it that way. And I think, you know what, I believe that is. I think that is 100% the influence of the new head coach in Jonathan Gannon, because of preaching that type of accountability is, I think, that permeates through the locker room, and it's just one of those things that I love to see. And I believe with Gannon and this team, I've believed from the beginning that Kyler would thrive because of the demands and the hard coaching, because Kyler is competitive. He will take to hard coaching. And as long as he sees that it is successful, guess what? He will do it, and he'll thrive. And I believe that was what was lacking with Cliff during those 4 years, because I always felt like Cliff was just like, I love Kyler. Yes, do your thing. Instead of saying, Kyler, we need you to do this, and this, let's do this. I expect this out of you. And now they're doing that, and he's flourishing. Nobody, it wasn't asked of him before that, whether it was, and I don't think it was on Kyler. I also think when he came into the league, the team was just, wow, you're here, instead of, okay, let's do this. They already anointed him that first year, and I know that rubbed some guys the wrong way. In fact, there was some friction. It wasn't necessarily a friction between Kyler and Fitz, but when we heard comments from guys who had private conversations with Fitzgerald, Fitz did not like the way the franchise handled Kyler Murray, the rookie.
Right, and that's a big thing. So we'll see how that, you know, changes as this goes on, as he, you know, takes over a leadership and maturity role. And those are things that, you know, we hadn't, like you said, we hadn't seen before. So we'll see how this goes now.
Other good things to like to see, just I loved the fact that he was not, he played like he was himself. The mobility, the speed that plays with his legs was, it was just great to see that. Hey, you know, the fear that we all had that in the initial par is like, is he going to RG3 this? You watch the way he moved. There was it. You would have never known that he had a knee injury.
No, and that was a big thing, like you said. That was one of the biggest question marks we were going to have about the whole situation, is could they get through this? And you know, the answer initially is yes. You know, and it's one game, and it's against a mediocre, albeit, team fighting for a playoff spot. And that is going to help determine what this team is moving forward, because as much as the tryout of Kyler is important, like I talked about at the beginning, it's the overall team and what they look like that really is going to matter, right? And they have to look like a franchise heading in the right direction, even if they end up, and I don't think they will, and we'll talk about this, but even if they end up 3-14, right? If they're competing against every team and there's no more games like there was against Cleveland, then you're like, okay, they're going in the right direction. You know, but on the flip side, if things are going poorly and you know, he's not buying in now and other guys aren't buying in, it makes it really difficult, right? And so that's the good vibes from the game one are important, but it's carrying those through game by game that really is what is going to make the difference, and not just for this year, but for the immediate future of the franchise.
And you know, it was also great the scenario in which Kyler came back and the end of game. We'll talk about like the things that were good and bad, but first game back, he gets the ball with 2 minutes and a, 2.5 minutes left in the game, and he leads them down the field, and they win the game. It was a game-winning drive in a game that, you know, they got clutch. They got clutch. Trey McBride had a great game. But just to see Kyler, like, that's the sort of thing like Josh Dobbs did at Minnesota. Now, a lot of these guys had a belief in Kyler already. But to get your quarterback back, your starter, and for a lot of the guys, it's new. To immediately, in game one, all right. And he goes out and brings together a clutch, game-winning, fourth quarter comeback, because it was they were down a point. Down a point, game-winning drive to do it in the fashion they did it, including that just absolute that run, that 13-yard run that he had to run 68 yards to run for 13 yards, which was – that was vintage Kyler, if you can call vintage Kyler for guys that have been, you know,
four years in the league. Yeah.
Vintage Kyler. That's the sort of thing – I think that's something to build on, both as a teammate, because it's like – it's almost like he was a rookie again, but – he's like an old rookie, and
he comes back in
immediately, and he wins a game for them, and that's got to be so great for that locker room.
But he basically is a rookie. I mean, that's the reality. He's a rookie that is getting healthy for the first time. You know, playing in a new offense, playing under a new coaching staff, like all of those things that you can't discount. You know, he's doing and. That's the reality right now. And like you said, to get a win in that scenario is just so big for the belief in things, because I think that is one of the big things that we need to discuss. It isn't the overall, like, oh, is this team going to compete, blah, blah, blah. No, it's literally what are, and I know this is a millennial term at this point, but like, what are the vibes, right? What are the vibes of the franchise? And right now, the vibes before that game, the vibes were very down. You know, the vibes were not in a good spot. And so I think now you look at it and you go, okay, you feel like you're heading in the right direction. And that's a huge thing. I mean, that's just, it can't be understated that is what this team has desperately needed.
Yes. Coming up next on the Rise of Spirit podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's move on beyond the Kyler factor. What other good things did we see in that game? That's coming up next on Rise of Spirit. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. I mean, it's a win, so there's lots of good things to talk about, but like, this was not only the Kyler Murray comeback, it was the Trey McBride breakout. And I remember it was you or Blake in the group chat that talked about it. All last year as a rookie, Steve Keim, everyone, they all had Trey pegged as a Max Williams type player. Like the complete, like, and in fairness, he did do a ton of blocking at Colorado State. But he was great. He was the best tight end in the nation because of what he did as a pass catcher last year. And maybe it was in part because they already had Zach Ertz. And so you weren't going. But I'll be honest, poor Ertz sitting on IR. And you know what he's doing? He's seeing his job taken away.
Yeah, and it's not unexpected. They're obviously a very talented he's a very talented player, and they drafted him for this scenario, right? They drafted him to become the franchise in the future at tight end, something that they've just never had. And he just has so much more juice than Max does now, right? Like, unfortunately, Max is, you know, you talked about Kyler and age. The reality is Max is old at this point.
Are you talking about Zach?
Zach. Or Zach, yeah, yeah. Zach. Sorry, Zach
Max
is.
Max was old. In the same situation last year. He was washed, but that was because his knee just didn't come back. He could barely Max Williams doesn't walk normal anymore, and so last year the fact that he was able to play was
feel awful for him, right? Like he gave everything to the game, and that's just the cruelty of the NFL. And you know, it's one of the reasons that, even though nobody wants to talk about it, it's one of the reasons you were worried about Kyler, right? Because we've seen this from the game. We've seen this from the league. And it's nothing against, you know, the league itself. But, like, the reality is there's a lot of guys that get hurt and they just are never the same guy. Or the injuries take a toll. And I get it was his first true kind of injury situation, but he, you know, Kyler is so dynamic that once that's gone, it's a problem. And so to see him play like he did, man, that was, because like you said, like the passing, that's just going to be a timing thing. Let's just be honest. Like that's just about game reps, getting more of them and being ready for them. And, you know, they got to get there and get used to it. But with the running thing, that was the biggest concern. We've never been worried about, can Kyler still make the throws? Cause we know he can. The arm question is, or the arm's never been an issue or a question, but did he have the athleticism to continue to make highlight plays? And the answer was just a resounding yes, right?
It was. Now we've all heard the stat. We've been waiting for this 100-yard tight end game since Rob A. Walton, 1989. Now, granted, crazy stat is the fact that the Cardinals have a Hall of Fame tight end in their history in Jackie Smith. He never had a 100-yard game. In fact, because the only 100-yard games that the tight ends have ever had was in 88, Jay Nevichek had one. 89, Rob A. Walton had one. And now Trey McBride. But it's... I don't know what it is, but I guess they figured out that they found the right role for him because Ertz is out, and so you can use Jeff Swaim in that Max Williams role. Like, basically, let's not call it a Max Williams role. It's a Jeff Swaim role. That's what Jeff Swaim's done his entire career. He can catch a few passes, but he's not a dynamic pass catcher. He'll catch the ball and get tackled. Like you put him underneath as a safety outlet, catch the ball, might run it for a couple yards, get tackled, and he's a very solid blocker. Swaim's playing the role that he's built to play, and McBride is your pass catching tight end who can also, he's a willing blocker, and he's a better blocker than Zach Ertz. But like he made a lot of mistakes last year as a rookie, but to see him flourish into, you know, someone who could be a consistent playmaker, that's fun. That's fun to see. And there was other things in the game that you had to like as well, like in individual players. You know, we worried about the transition when they went from Nolan. Well, when Andy Lee didn't come back and they went with Nolan Cooney as punter. And then they cut Cooney and brought in Blake Gillikin, or however you pronounce his name. And then you saw how mad Brader was a couple of weeks ago when the hold was stupid and he missed it. But to go 4 for 4, no issues with that, the snaps or the hold. Two from 50-plus yards, the game winner. Brader, who I believe, is the league's all-time greatest kicker in the final 2 minutes of game. I do not remember. I think I remember hearing that stat, so I'm not going to – I don't want to like declare that as truth if I believe that is the case. But in terms of individuals, Matt Prater was great. I, you know, when this drops on Wednesday, I think I'll be surprised if he isn't special teams player of the week for the NFC. And then?
Yeah, because he had what, two?
Two beyond 50 plus the game winner, four total. I mean, that's a player of the week type week for special teams.
Right. And, you know, it was just, it was great to see. And all of these things, you know, are coming into focus in a positive way now. And the team just has to continue to build off of what was an excellent win and excellent performance overall.
And then the other guy we have to definitely shout out is Seth's second favorite BJ in the world, and that's BJ Ojulari playing more. His role is growing and picked up two sacks and looked really good doing it.
Yeah, and he's and like you said, he's just growing into the role, which is, you know, we were wondering because he was just so underutilized early.
Right. And you know, and they slow played him, and now we're starting to see why, because he was the times that he'd been playing on the field had felt kind of invisible. And like this last weekend at home against the Falcons, he had two sacks, but he was also all over the field. I think it was eight tackles in that game. So his role, and I don't know if the playing time was the result of how good he was playing or whether he got the playing time because his role was increased because of what he was doing in practice. But you got to see, like, we knew he was athletic, but he's the guy that gives you some elite bend off the edge there. Like, you've got Collins, who is extremely strong and athletic.
And I think that's something, too, is that Collins is turning into a very sound edge defender. Like you said, not the spectacular rusher that you know, you would hope, but he's turning into a really nice player that's going to, he looks like, projects that he could be, you know, a 6 to 8 sack a year guy, which is, I think, more than enough. It's somebody else becoming that premier guy, and maybe even that's when Collins kicks down or comes off the field every once in a while, but he's becoming so dynamically good against the run that now with Ojulari stepping up, and it's crazy to look at this numbers, man. It's crazy to think about this. Gardeck, 5 sacks. Dimakaji, 4 sacks. Collins, 3.5, and Ojulari, 3. That's 15.5 sacks from their edge players. You and I, you could have asked us.
Those are the numbers that we kind of wanted to see, right? If we were talking right off the season, that was roughly the production we hoped we would get from that group, like for a full season, right?
That's right. Like, and we're hoped 10 games in, and, yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I just think that getting to the point in a positive way where, and we're just seeing so much of Gannon and Rallis and how talented they are at getting positive play out of players. And I think, you know, obviously Collins and Dimakaji weren't their draft picks, but I think we can both agree that they're getting more out of those guys than the previous regime did. And you and I have always said, Vance Joseph seems like he's an incredibly good schemer of things, but he runs his scheme and it works or it doesn't. Whereas it feels like Rallis and Gannon, we don't even kind of really know what their scheme is because they're so busy making sure that they implement things that work for everybody on the roster.
Yeah, it's been really, really fun to see. James Conner in the lineup was a boost. And
man, doesn't he just like change the dynamic? It's unfortunate and it's great. I mean, it's unfortunate because a running back, you and I are never team running backs don't matter in the least, but a running back shouldn't dictate that much, if that makes sense.
Well, and it's weird because you expect that from certain running backs to have that much of an impact, because James Conner is not a premier running back.
No, not in the least.
But he is, in terms of impact for this team, he has the same sort of impact that a premier runner has. But at the same time, the fact that when he left and it was DeMarcado that was holding things down, but it's great to have him back, and we hope, like, and it was the questions like, oh, is Connor Hunt? No, they snap counted him. They snap counted him because there was a couple of drives you're like, why is Keontae Ingram in there?
Man, and speaking of the old regime, man, that guy's bad. I think we do need to shout out a couple of other guys, right? Obviously, you know, Paris Johnson Jr. just continues to grow as a player and what he's done. But Kelvin Beachum, the 33-year-old now, 34-year-old, did a fantastic game in his first game back at left tackle. He's almost, he's 34 and a half. So older gentleman, played very well at left tackle. Carter O'Donnell.
That was shock. When I was like, yeah, Carter O'Donnell starting? The guy had played 17 NFL snaps, period. And those were the 17 snaps he played last week. He had never played in an NFL game, and then he was starting at left guard, which that left guard spot, wow. That's Elijah Wilkinson, Tristan Cologne, Dennis Daly. And that was weird because when Gannon talked about it, it was like, what about Dennis Daly? Maybe it's because they like Daly's versus
flexibility,
I guess, better. I don't know. But, yeah, that was a surprise to see O'Donnell in the lineup, and you didn't notice him being out there, which is, you know, for the offensive line, normally when's the only time you really, especially an interior defender, when's the only time you notice when
they're bad? Yeah.
It's when they're bad. Tackles, you can see, you can notice the tackles against edge guys dominant. You can see that he's doing really well. The interior guys, if you don't notice them, they had a good game, because if they're having a bad game, you notice them. You'll notice a guy stunt right by him or get bull rushed into, like, get put on skates backwards into the pocket. And that's interesting because in terms of an evaluative types thing, you love to see that because he's a guy they picked up off waivers who was a nobody. Like, Carter O'Donnell was a nobody, and if he can be a serviceable starter every time, that's a win.
Yeah, and that was a huge moment for them, you know, of getting there and it being a positive thing, like you said. I think, you know, it wasn't pretty by any means, but getting a game out of Will Hernandez, hurting as bad as he was, I think it was, I don't remember if it was Darren or if it was Josh or who the media person was, that mentioned just how banged up he was before the game and that they were shocked to see him out even warming up because he was just so beat up. I guess, you know, he's a dude. I mean, he is just a tough, tough SOB. And I think to see him back out there, it just, you know, it goes to show you so much of this stuff is just showing up. And a lot of times there are guys that just aren't, you know, aren't good enough. But Will Hernandez is such a talented player that when he's on the field, it changes the complexion of the game.
Yeah, and it was helpful. It was helpful in the fact that Grady Jarrett is out for the rest of the season and David Onyemata was unable to play. And so Centavius Street, who's not a bad player, but that was helpful in a game where Hernandez was not 100%.
Right. I think in that, Yelda Froholt, I mean, we'll talk about it, had probably his worst game of the season. And then, like you said, we're starting a guy named Carter O'Donnell. Like, so
that's a two last name guy.
Right. And so to have that happening and then to see the positive outcome, like I said, I think it was just I think it was great overall on the offensive side of the ball.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. We've talked all the good stuff. Let's get down to nitty gritty. Where's stuff that we were a little bit disappointed in? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Talking Cardinals Falcons. They pick up their first win since week three, snapping that six game losing streak. Not everything was good, obviously. Like, you, if you're looking at the defense now, you look at the raw numbers, only 254 yards allowed, good. 7 of 14 on third down, not good. Then you look at also the red zone numbers as well. Where is those red zone numbers? They were 3 for 4 in the red zone. And so some of those metrics, like, this is like the opposite of Vance Joseph. Like, Vance Joseph didn't really care about yards. He looked at third down. He looked at red zone. And part of that was because the Falcons were just dead set on running the ball, and they did a good job at it. Over 40 rushing, 184 rushing yards, almost 100 from Bijan Robinson, who looked really good. And so the fact that they did struggle to get off the field on third down, this game would have been much better if they'd have gotten two more stops. And in fairness, the officiating was atrocious. There were three, like, just bad calls. The roughing the passer call on Dennis Gardeck on third down, which would have been a punt. You're like, why? The pass interference call on Antonio Hamilton that led to the touchdown, that was also what?
That was brutal.
But there were two or three calls. You're just like, why in heaven's name did they call that? But, you know, they battled, but I thought the defense, despite only allowing 254 yards, had much better games before.
Correct. And those things, you know, all mattered. And we saw that this is a team that, again, it lacks talent, but it puts guys in a position to be successful. And I think that's what we saw. You know, it allows guys to make plays. It's just a matter that sometimes they're just quite not good enough to make the plays. I think we'd be remiss to swing back real quick to the positives, to not mention Dante Stills and Garrett Williams both played lights out again. Obviously, if Garrett Williams is good, that's huge, because you need as many corners as you can get in the NFL, right? But
if Stills, man, does anything, like, that's the thing, getting a guy like that so late in the draft, if he's anything,
right? And to get a guy that, and if he ends up just being the player he is right now for the next three seasons, and you end up getting a guy that ends up with 5 sacks and, you know, and, you know, 8 to 10 tackles for a loss in a season, you go, sign me up in the sixth round,
right?
Like, sign me up. And so I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention them. There were a couple, I mean, obviously there's always negatives in every game, and we try not to harp on those things.
Penalties
too much. Woo! Penalties were one. I thought Marco regressed after we'd been complimenting him for two straight weeks, right?
Yeah.
He took a step back. I thought that the rotation of Lucky Fotu and Roy Lopez, which we'd been hoping would take off at nose tackle, was kind of a dud this week, which is disappointing. But, you know, again, you can't be too overly critical. I thought what we saw from these guys this week was strong enough. And you know, we know, that's what I said, like, when you're, and I hate saying this, when you're counting on Lucky Fotu and Roy Lopez to get 75 snaps combined in a game, you're getting what you pay for. And you're paying those two combined, what, $3 million maybe? Like, you're just going to get what you pay for. Another one that he didn't play a ton, but when he was in, it didn't look pretty. That was Zach Pascal. You mentioned Elijah Higgins drop. Pascal, it wasn't a drop, but it was definitely one of those plays where you would have just liked to seen a little more effort, right?
Right.
He didn't fight back hard enough to the ball. You know, we're not going to harp on it for long because it just is what it is at this point, and it explains so much. But man, Keontae Ingram is a bust. Like, it's just unfortunate. It's the reality. He's a bust at this point. Like, it is what it is. You know, that's a tough thing to say about a guy, but he just lacks any finesse or vision. And for a guy that big and that athletic, those are, you should be able to either be really good at pounding through the line, or you should be, you're so athletic that you don't need to worry about being overly physical. And those things are just not there for him. And then Yelta Froholt, I think this is just a, you know, clear reality that he was.
Yeah. And for the Froholt part was, it was a really bad sequence there in the first half.
It was, you're right. But it's also, you know, I always give a guy two games to kind of get acclimated with a new quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's different cadence and stuff like that. And it's interesting because we actually had to talk to our, like, our youth quarterback about this, because our normal quarterback is out. He broke his thumb, and you know, so we got a kid that's very talented backing him up and playing right now. And the team we were playing this weekend just loves to blitz, and they love to all out blitz all the time. And there was a situation or a sequence where they were timing up his snap and literally getting a running start on their blitz and then timing it perfectly. And we said, hey, you've got to change your cadence. And so, and to explain that to him and then to have him do it, well, you know, that happens in the NFL too. Like, these guys aren't robots, so they all don't have the same cadence or same way of doing something. So, you know, I'll give Froholt the benefit of the doubt, because I thought that was probably his weakest game of his tenure with the Cardinals. But it's nothing to be like overly irritated about. You know, and then what is your thought on Gillikin? Like, I feel like he's not bad, but I feel like he's just so inconsistent with the depth and the height of his punts. Like, sometimes he really outkicks the coverage and he opens up easy return lanes. And then sometimes it's great. I think there was one on Sunday that was like fantastic, but then sometimes it's like he can't even get the ball forward. Like, it just feels like there's no consistency with him.
I would agree that's been one of the more interesting decisions that we've seen this year, because I didn't notice Cooney being bad. Except for there were a couple of bad, but like, what happened when he totally beat out Matt Hawk? that was like, he totally beat out Matt Hawk, and then they're like, no, four games in, nah, we're done with you. But it's interesting, and maybe I don't know if there's connection with any of the coaching staff prior, but at least with kicking operations, that was good.
Yeah, it's smooth, and that, I think, this is crazy to say, I think at this point that's more important, right?
Yeah. I mean, as long as you just need to be an okay punter, honestly, with your punter. You just can't. Most of the time, if you've got an okay offense, you just need an okay punter.
Right. But he's career low in net yards per punt, which means, you know, not just distance, but amount of return yards. And the interesting thing about it is his yards per punt is his career long. So he's punting further than ever before, but his net yards per punt is a career low. And then he's also got the least amount of punts down inside the 20 in his career. Now, again, I'm going to give him some time for that, because I don't think that the offense has yielded much for him chance.
That's true, because the offense was bad in those games. And so that's going to be an interesting thing to watch for sure. This isn't a negative, but hey, Clayton Tune, Clayton, this, remember when this looked like what they were going to do with Chris Streveler, and then they didn't end up doing it?
Right.
And this coaching staff is like, okay, we're going to roll with it. This quarterback sneak play, that tush push, that brotherly shove, and the fact I really liked that they gave both looks. That so now teams know that Clayton Tune in the game means probably a quarterback sneak, but maybe not. And because
right.
You know, at 6'3", 220, that's better than 5'10", 207. Kyler doesn't like that. He doesn't like that play. He's never been comfortable with it. He's like, I don't want – that's why they never did with Cliff. He just didn't like that. So I don't know if we'll ever see Kyler do that.
But I also think it – you know, again, one of the things about that play in particular is it's not as effective as everybody assumes outside of Philadelphia. And so those things matter when you're looking at it. And so – to have Clayton Tune, and by the way, Clayton Tune almost fumbled that ball. Like, it was really, really close. And so that's what I mean by it doesn't always work outside of Philadelphia. And so that's what's going to matter in the coming, you know, weeks and stuff like that, is how do they get that in there? But yeah, it's good to see him be able to make a positive contribution.
He was praised by Gannon after the game for the way he bounced back from that. Like, he came back, had a great week of practice, has a role in the offense, and I've kind of figured we would never hear from Clayton Tune ever again. Because ideally, that's what would happen. He didn't play any offensive snaps in the 8 games that Dobbs started. He got 2 more offensive snaps that he'd had all year when Dobbs was the starter, so it's good to see. Yeah, and coming up next on the Rise of Seward podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's look at the remaining schedule. What can we maybe expect from Kyler in terms of wins? That's coming up next on Rise of Seward. We're back on the Rise of Seward podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals have 7 games left on their schedule. We kind of thought, I'll be honest, if we look at it, if I believe I had, like, I predicted the Cardinals, I thought I had Kyler coming back in week 6 when I made my schedule predictions. And I believe my prediction said to start off that the Cardinals would go 0-3 with Kyler's first 3 games. Back then, they would have been 1-8 coming into this game when they picked up their next win. And so now we're looking at the season that remains. So we've got coming up, you've got Houston on the road. We're not going to talk about that game yet. So we got Houston on the road, who's much better than expected. You get the Rams back at home. You get the Steelers on the road. You get the bye week. And then in the final games, you've got San Francisco again. You've got Chicago, Philadelphia, and you've got Seattle. If you look at the games that they should, like Chicago, probably the Cardinals, like assuming the Cardinals continue on the trajectory they're on, they should beat the Bears.
Yeah, no injuries. I look at it like this. We'll talk obviously about the Houston game on Thursday. But you look at Houston, LA, Pittsburgh before the bye week. All 3 of those games are winnable. I don't expect any of them to be wins. Does that make sense?
Right.
Like, I think all 3 of those games are winnable, but I wouldn't expect or say like, oh, they're going to win that game. So you've got those 3. Then you come to the bye and you look at it and you go San Francisco, Chicago, Philly, Seattle. That looks like one winnable game, depending on what Seattle's doing on January 7th. And the way it's shaping up is that they're going to be playing for a wild card position. So you look at it, you say 4 games out of the 7 left winnable. You look at it, if LA is without Matt Stafford, you feel confident in 2 games, and Houston would be a coin flip, leaning Houston. until we see more from Kyler. And Pittsburgh right now, the same thing. That's how I kind of look at it. So if you say four of the seven are winnable, you would like to win three of those games. And I know going 3-4 is a huge thing,
but
you know,
but that would put them going 4-4 in the final eight games with Kyler, and that with the roster that they have.
Well, and how they've played.
That's a win overall.
And how they've played so far. Like, you know, because you look back, obviously 1, 2, 3, and even parts of 4 and 5 were competitive. And then the LA game, the Seattle game, and the Baltimore game, you really never felt like they had a chance, right? Like, those games were closer score-wise at times, but like, you just never felt like they had a chance. And then obviously it all came to a screeching halt in the worst possible way in the Cleveland game. And so, like I said, if you're in the Dallas, obviously that's the best, but if you're in the Dallas, Washington, Atlanta type of game, you're fine. You can't afford to be in games like obviously Cleveland, but even Baltimore, like where you're, you know, so many of those points were garbage time, right? Like they were just garbage time. And so you look at it and you go, well, you know, yeah, it was 31-24, but was it really that? I mean, 17 fourth quarter points for a team that had not scored since the Dallas game in the second half. Like, let's be realistic. And so that's what you want to see more of, right? You want to see this team competing and being in games. And if they win games like the Atlanta game in the sense of like comeback, game-winning drive, things like that, then all you're doing is getting ready and preparing a lot of the young guys for close, impactful games next year. Because let's be honest, even though they're technically not eliminated, and even if they got to 5-8, which means they go 4-0 the first four games back for Kyler, neither you or I are going to, if they're at 5-8 at the bye week, go, hey, they're still in this. We're both going to be like, look, mathematically, yes, they're in this. But San Francisco, Philly, Seattle is a juggernaut of a schedule. And unfortunately, they played one of the hardest schedules in the NFL this year, which also goes to the reality that this was going to be a tough season overall. It also sucks because I understand it from a competition standpoint, but it sucks that they're punished for playing such a hard schedule in tie-breaking scenarios in the draft, right? Like that the New York Giants beat them and hold the second pick over them now. Because they don't care about head-to-head. They're more concerned with strength of schedule, and the strength of schedule for the Cardinals is so
And I get it. I
so
mean,
good.
I get it. I get why.
Yeah, you're helping a team that obviously wasn't any good and was losing games still, whereas as opposed to the Cardinals are playing a really tough schedule and losing games that they're supposed to lose, right? So, oh, this isn't a shock.
so
if they get to, if obviously three more wins would be huge, getting to five would be unbelievable, but like you said, that would be 4-4 in Kyler's return. So three wins, getting to four total, which is so sad to say, let's be honest as well. but three more wins, so four or two more wins, getting to four total would be ideal. But getting to five, anything where they're 500 or better with Kyler, it just puts to bed any notion of needing to move on at that point, right?
Absolutely. I think that's a perfect way to say it. Say if they're 500, if they go 4-4 or better over the last 8 games, you feel 100% confident in what the plan is moving forward, and that will be build around Kyler rather than blow it up.
Right.
That's yeah. And the starting over, it's a good thing. It's good vibes, you know, good vibes. So let's hope for that. And if they could somehow win 5 out of that, go 5-3 down the stretch, that's going to,
that would be unbelievable.
Right. Well, then it gets them to 6 wins. It hits that because their projected win total was for much of the offseason 5.5. And so win 6. Hey guys, when we said take over 5.5 wins, okay, we're gonna win you some money. Now it's, you know, it as bad as they were early on. So we've got a hope for what happens. Like what happens this week? If they beat Houston, okay, then you feel a lot better because Houston's playing really well. The Rams, Matthew Stafford's expected to be back against Seattle this week, which means after that, but even with Matthew Stafford back, you beat Houston, you feel like at home you could beat the Rams. The Steelers are definitely beatable, for sure, and you get momentum going into the bye week, and then things could fall apart, but whatever. So, you know, if somehow they manage to rattle off these 4 wins and get to 5 overall, if they win one of the final 4, sweet, sweet. And then that's right where we had it. Like we were like 6-7 wins. And then we look like brilliant people. And
right.
And we're all about making ourselves look brilliant. Cause the stuff that makes us look dumb, we just ignore, right? That's how the internet and podcasts work. There's no accountability for it. If you thought we said something dumb, you're going to have to go back to the old episodes, and we're on the 486th one. Are you going to listen to all that? But yeah. So yeah, that'd be fantastic. And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast. Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web. That's Seth Cox. I'm Just Rue. We'll be back again later this week to preview Cardinals Texans, no longer the Tank Bowl. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple of days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!